Jason, thanks for chatting to me this morning.
Good morning.
So I wanted to, you know, talk a little bit about what would be required by a court to uphold a defamation lawsuit.
Yeah, sure. So it's a fairly easy cause of action for a claimant to establish. Surprisingly so, it only requires that that there be a publication of defamatory material which identifies the claimant. So there are three elements, essentially, and they are fairly easy to make out. And then it then goes over to the defensive side, and they have to establish a viable defence. And that can be really tricky.
Yeah, of course. I mean, and how difficult can it be to defend this? Because, I mean, obviously here at 2SER, this is a line that we walk every day. And it's if you identify a person or persons and they're identifiable, right? So not necessarily saying their name, but saying enough things that, you know, you can identify them. So, you know, what is the defence like in that scenario?
Well, I mean, I suppose you could rely. So, if someone has been identified for the purposes of the law, then the defendant will have to establish one of the defences, and that would be either truth or honest opinion, for example. Or there's also a defence called qualified privilege, but they are generally difficult to make out. And the main one that people sort of know about, I suppose, is the truth defence, which requires proving the truth of any allegations that have been published. Now, that can sometimes be quite difficult because you need evidence, obviously, and that's where journalists in particular often come into difficulty, where they may have material that points to someone, you know, for example, being guilty of an offence or doing something else, but they don't have proof which is admissible in court, and that's where the difficulty lies.
Mm. And in terms of, you know, evidence and proof, does that mean that something has to be, you know, for example, a court case ruled on for it to be proof?
Or does it just have to be evidence? Not necessarily so. And it all depends on what are known as imputations. So they're the meanings that a claimant or a plaintiff says that a publication gives rise to. It depends on how those meanings are precisely worded. So sometimes it might require an actual conviction of a court. Other times it might just require other evidence of an event occurring, for example, but not necessarily that it was, you know, a criminal event. So it just really depends on the way the case is run.
Mm, and I mean, you know, in 2021, social media and our virtual world has changed the publishing game completely, right? What mediums can be grounds for producing defamatory material?
Any. So, I mean, you can do it in a Facebook post or in a tweet. There are no limitations on the medium, I suppose, that can be used to convey the meaning, the defamatory meaning that's required. It can be absolutely anything. I think the interesting thing about this case is the question of identification, because in the ABC article, he wasn't directly identified.
Mm.
And so the question will be whether or not identification will be established. The tricky thing with internet publications is that the publication occurs each and every time it's downloaded.
Yeah, right.
So over time, there can be hundreds and hundreds of torts, or thousands even, of individual torts committed. Now, they're litigated as one. But what that means is that once someone is well known in the public domain as being the person referred to, that article, which didn't usually, or prior to that identification, wouldn't have been able to be understood as referring to that particular person, now becomes clearly about that person. And I think when Christian Porter came out and self-identified in his statement to the press, I think from that moment on, that's when potentially the article identified Christian Porter. So in asking sort of about internet publications, they often sort of change the way in which rules are applied in kind of unexpected ways.
Right.
And that's the real concern, is that, you know, something which is not defamatory, for example, at one point in time, but it remains available online and is subsequently downloaded at a time when it is defamatory, all of a sudden becomes actionable.
Because there was a case, I'm pretty sure it was last year, where a publication was sued for users' comments on the article. Is that right?
Yep, that's the Voller and Fairfax case. Yep.
Yeah, so does that play in here as well then?
Yeah, so that's, I suppose, a different basis for being held to be liable that has never been recognised before by the law. So now we have a situation where if a media organisation owns a Facebook page, they can be considered to be publishers of third-party comments posted up in response to any posts that they put up, even prior to them having noticed that those posts even exist, those defamatory comments even exist.
Yeah, it is. It's a huge...
Which is extraordinary.
Yeah, it's a huge thing, isn't it? Jason, we've run out of time, but thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me here on 2SER.
No problem. Thanks for having me.